Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and we're here every week to deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding balance in body, mind, and spirit, which is the focus I have in terms of my personal life as well as the way I work with clients. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So, again, what we get into each week is topics, a variety of topics that help you learn the various approaches to therapy, mental health issues. We talk about relationships, and hopefully you'll gain some information about your own life, your own relationships, possibly some tools to help you through whatever it is you're going through, or at least the courage and motivation to seek out some professional help. Now, this is a live call-in show this week, and the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet, which I know a number of you are because I get emails from you, it's the same number, 480-949-1310. So, are any of you getting sleepy? I hope not if you're driving. And I hope that this show tonight is not going to get you spacey, because the topic this week is going to be hypnosis. We're going to be talking about what it is, what it isn't, how it works, how it doesn't work, what can it help, what can't it help. And in order to go there, I have actually a very longtime friend of mine, Dr. James Walton, who's a PhD in Los Angeles, who actually also has his own radio show, which I'm going to let him talk about a little bit later. And he is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a hypnotherapist. In fact, somebody who's put me under a couple of times. So, Jim, you there?
Stuart.
Well, welcome to the show again. This isn't your first time on here, is it?
Yes. Well, thank you very much for having me on.
You were able to hear that introduction, and I know that what hypnosis usually is about is really relaxation. And most people, when they hear about hypnosis, they usually say, well, I can't be hypnotized, or they're skeptical about it. What is hypnosis?
Well, hypnosis is actually a very relaxed form of meditation. When I try to explain what hypnosis is to somebody who's never had it before, I ask them if they've ever done a meditation before, because it's really about being able to focus in your imagination. And it creates a tremendous amount of relaxation. And in the process, what happens is the individual becomes suggestible to external suggestions.
What does that mean?
Well, what that means is you can put somebody under hypnosis, and you can create for them, if you're doing stage hypnosis, let's say, you can create the illusion of handing them a broomstick and saying, this is Marilyn Monroe, and you're Fred Astaire, and I want you to dance like, you know, Fred Astaire. And the individual will either start to dance, you know, incredibly well on stage, or they'll dance very sloppily and be entertaining. So either way, they become very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is, with that suggestibility, is that that individual on stage wants to believe that the broomstick is as if it were Marilyn Monroe.
Uh-huh.
They realize it's not on stage, but they want to go along with it because the suggestibility goes into the imagination, and they use their imagination and take that suggestion in and then act as if that were the case.
Okay. I actually want to deal with a technical issue here, not about hypnosis, but about the broadcast right now, actually.
Yeah.
And I need to let my engineer know that I know Jim is calling in, and I'm having difficulty hearing him. His voice is very low. So, Jim, I don't know if it's
Stuart,
the phone
I'm having
you're
the
using.
Same problem here, too. It's very hard hearing you.
Okay. So, Wade, is there something we can do about that? Okay. If it continues, we'll take a short break and see what my engineer can do to correct it. So you're having difficulty hearing me also?
Yes, your voice is very weak.
So getting back to the issue of suggestibility.
Yes.
A lot of people, when they think of hypnosis, like I said earlier, they say, well, I can't be hypnotized. Well, they have this fear that, you know, what we see in movies where somebody hypnotizes them and they become a slave to the master, so to speak.
Right.
What would you say to something like that?
I'd say it's not possible. What happens with hypnosis is it's really about cooperation. The individual that's going to be hypnotized has to cooperate with the experience. In fact, 90% of the people that can be hypnotized out there in the world.
90% can.
10% have, it's more difficult to hypnotize them for a couple reasons. And one of the reasons is that they refuse to cooperate with it. And if an individual refuses to cooperate with hypnosis, they won't go into it. So at no point are you ever the slave to the hypnotist. He can never give you a suggestion that would go against your own values or your own decisions. So if someone comes in, let's say, for stopping smoking, their intention is to stop smoking, and they cooperate with the hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But if the hypnotist, let's say, were to give a suggestion that 3 o'clock you're going to rob a bank, and that's not part of the character of the individual, they're actually not going to do that. They'll either wake up out of hypnosis, or they'll just ignore the suggestion.
Well, say somebody is a sociopath and they go under, I mean, can they make them go rob a bank?
Well, if the sociopath wants to rob the bank, I guess you give them a suggestion, you know, more power to them at that point.
Okay.
They'll probably get more creative.
Uh-huh.
But that's because that is what's called egosyntonic, which means it goes, it's in cooperation, in agreement with the ego. It's part of that individual's character. If you told them to do something against their character, they wouldn't do it. So a sociopath, of course, that might be part of their character.
Okay. Jim, I think we're going to take a short break to see if these technical things can be ironed out. Wade, can we just take a minute or two, go into break, and let me know what's going on with the volume?
Certainly.
Okay, thanks.
Stuart?
Yeah?
Would you like me to hang up and call back? Maybe it's just the line.
Well, let's hear what he has to say first. I don't know if we're still on the air or not.
Okay, because...
Better performance? Get to AutoZone and get everything you need for a proper tune-up, like Bosch Platinum Plus 4 spark plugs. Bosch Platinum Plus 4's revolutionary firing technology delivers the longest, most powerful spark for smoother acceleration, peak fuel efficiency, and maximum engine power. So tune up your car today and get in the zone. AutoZone.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Judy, you signed up for a Medicare drug plan, right?
Yep.
Are you really saving anything?
About $300 a month for my heart medicine.
Whoa!
The more you know about Medicare prescription drug coverage, the better it sounds.
Can you show me how you did it?
Can you show me how you make your apple cake?
For help, call 1-800-MEDICARE, go to Medicare.gov, or turn to each other. To avoid penalties, sign up by May 15th, paid for by the Department of Health and Human Services.
Where do you want to be?
Everybody has a different idea of the perfect home.
I'd love a little house in the country.
I want someplace close to my office.
It's essential that I live within the delivery zone of my favorite pizza parlor.
Find your perfect place. It's easy with REMAX. REMAX agents have the experience to make your dreams a reality. Visit REMAX.com today. Nobody sells more real estate than REMAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
Fly crazy with chips, swim crazy, cash. Fly crazy with chips, swim crazy, cash. Fly crazy with chips, swim crazy.
One definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over, yet expecting different results. Well, in this case, it's a good thing, because inside a bag of Chips Ahoy,
grab a bag of Chips Ahoy,
you might find a Crazy with Chips game piece, which means you could win $100,000 instantly.
Grab a bag of Chips Ahoy. La, 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 la.
No purchase necessary. Subject to official rules. See details on specially marked packages of Chips Ahoy. Open to U.S. residents. Ends 10-4-06. Void where prohibited.
This is Independent, 1310 KXAM.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster, and sorry about that technical glitch, and hopefully everything is moving along really well right now. Jim, you there? Jim?
Hello, Stuart?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay. That you, Jim?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Can you hear me?
Oh, and I can hear you so much clearer. Thank you.
Oh, okay, great.
Well, I thought maybe you had hypnotized me to think you were so far away.
Yes.
As I was listening to the ads while we were on hold,
yes,
it dawned on me, I mean, ad firms, you know, the people who design these advertisements, especially on the radio or on TV, how much would you say hypnosis is applied to that? If hypnosis is about suggestibility, how does that come into play with advertising?
It is a huge part of advertising.
I never thought of it before.
Yes, absolutely. It is a very large part of it, whether or not the advertiser is intending it. But I think more and more, as they become more sophisticated, it's intentional. But the idea is you distract the conscious mind of the individual and you place suggestions into the unconscious. And I'll give you an example of how it works every day in your car. Most people, 90% of the people driving on the road out there are driving in a state of hypnosis. That means that the unconscious mind is taking over the driving part of the car. Now, when you were first learning how to drive a car, you had to, you know, remember, keep in mind how to step on the clutch if it were a stick shift, put it in reverse, look in the rearview mirror, step on the gas, and it was a complicated process at first. And over time, what happened is it becomes understood and perfunctory for the individual, and it drops into the unconscious part of the mind so that when you go to sit in the car to drive, you just know how to drive. You don't think about it anymore. Now, when you're driving, you can think about what you're going to have for dinner or an argument that you had a little earlier. You don't really need to think about what you're doing on the road. And it's very safe because the unconscious knows how to drive.
Right.
Well, when you're driving in that state, you're in hypnosis. Now you're listening to the radio. And anything that you hear on the radio bypasses the conscious part of the mind because the conscious mind isn't really present now. It doesn't need to drive. It can go somewhere else.
Hmm.
And so anything that's on the radio that you're listening to when you're driving in the car drops down into the unconscious mind. So any advertising that you hear goes deep into the unconscious. And it says, buy brand X when you're at the store. So the next day you go to the store and you're shopping around and you see brand Y and you see brand X. And you don't know why they're the same, but you just feel like picking up brand X. And you put it in your basket. Well, that's how hypnosis works, or one of the ways it works with advertising.
Okay, so everybody out there who's listening to this who says, well, I don't believe in hypnosis or it's not working for me, it's working for you.
Well, I don't know. Can I bring up a specific ad that I recently saw on television?
Uh-huh.
I won't name the company, but it's a popular ad out there right now, and it's one of the phone companies. And there's a man standing in the foreground talking about the phone company, and it's just kind of dry conversation. And in the background, you see this man that's dressed up in a costume, and he's trying to get in a door, and as he gets through the door, his cape gets caught in the door, and there's this whole silly little thing going on in the background that's quite amusing. It has nothing to do with what the man's talking about telephone service, except your conscious mind is now directed to this man in a costume that's having a problem getting through a door. And your unconscious mind is picking up everything that the man in the foreground is saying to you.
Wow. How blatant can that be now that people know about it?
Well, I don't think people really notice it because it's so amusing.
Uh-huh.
And they don't realize, you know, I was thinking at first when I saw it, I thought, why in the heck is this man in a costume? What does this have to do with selling telephone service?
I know. I've thought the same thing when I've seen it. I know which one you're talking about.
Well, that's what's happening is you are being hypnotized.
I'll be.
Your focus is somewhere else, and that's what hypnosis does. It takes your focus and puts it somewhere else, and then you become highly suggestible to whatever is being suggested.
Okay, so we now basically know that hypnosis is a way of sidestepping the conscious mind to get into the subconscious,
right.
Correct?
Yes.
In simple terms.
Yes.
Okay. So, and we now know that, what'd you say, 90% of the people can be hypnotized?
Well, probably higher than that, but yes.
Okay, okay. And basically, they need to trust the person that's doing it with them. They need to feel safe in the environment that they're in, even though they may be on a stage doing this entertainment type of hypnosis. Now, what's the difference between the hypnosis that you might be doing as a hypnotherapist as opposed to the hypnosis that we see entertaining on TV and in theaters?
Well, actually, the inductions are very similar. They're very, very similar. It's what you do after the person's under hypnosis that's you know, very different.
Mm-hmm.
For stage hypnosis, you're doing some entertainment value for an audience, and when you have a client in your office, it's therapeutic, and you're not getting them to perform. But for the other difference is when you're working in your office with a client, it doesn't matter what their suggestibility level is. It doesn't matter how deeply they go into hypnosis. Because it can be effective for individuals at other stages, and we can talk about that later. But for stage hypnosis, it's really important that you have what's called a third stage natural somnambulist, which is somebody who goes into hypnosis very, very easily. And they tend to be people who sleepwalk or people who are highly creative.
Well, how does the entertainer pick those people out of the audience?
Well, you know, different entertainers have their tricks, but one way of doing it, and I've done some stage shows before, and the way that I did it was you would hypnotize the entire audience, and you would do that through a patter, and you would draw everybody in, and you would 90% would be hypnotized, all right. And then what I would do is I would get them to tie a balloon to their hands and raise their hands up. Well, the people that raise their hands fastest tend to be the ones that went in the fastest and also go in the deepest.
So those are the people that you'd pick?
No, those are the people that I would pick.
Yeah. Well.
So you would see the people. You would know who went in. Because for a stage show, you certainly don't want to have, someone who has more difficulty going into hypnosis. It would be kind of a boring show.
Right. Well, without the conscious mind, then, I know that, all of us, and I talk about this in therapy all the time, when somebody is listening to someone, they're usually hearing what's being said through some kind of emotional filter or some kind of mental filter based on their own life experience. So they're not always hearing exactly what's meant. They're filtering it.
Right.
Now, my understanding is that if the conscious mind is kind of being put to sleep, then those filters, in a sense, are not present, so that you can get in there with suggestions, and even on stage, then, the fear of embarrassment is even gone. Is that correct?
No, I don't think that's completely correct.
Okay.
I think that the filters are still present.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the individual has to want to cooperate. And so if you have somebody, because the filters are can be defenses,
mm-hmm.
or can be ego defenses. And,
right.
And so if the individual is invested in these defenses, they're not going to cooperate with you with the hypnosis suggestions.
Right, okay.
So, but the people that go up on stage, they tend to be people who have exhibitionistic leanings anyway.
Okay.
It may be, it may not be obvious. They may have uncovered a hidden trait.
Uh-huh.
But they all have exhibitionistic, components to them. So it doesn't really embarrass them. They there's a part of them that may secretly or overtly want to be on stage.
Okay.
So they cooperate and they go on stage.
So I want to get from the entertainment type of hypnosis that almost everybody who might be listening has seen at one point or another, either on television in a movie or maybe in person. Before we get into how this is used as a therapeutic tool and maybe some situations that you could tell us in terms of how it worked with a particular client, I want to remind people, if they have questions for Jim and myself, we're speaking with Jim Walton, a PhD from Los Angeles, who is also a hypnotherapist, and the number is 480-949-1310. Now, let's shift gears into our therapist minds.
Okay.
What is hypnotherapy?
Well, hypnotherapy is using the same modality as one would use on the stage, only now you're using it in the office to help a client overcome habit or to have memory recall or to handle eating disorders or eating issues. It's a way of helping an individual reframe the way that they approach a particular problem in their lives. Or it can also be a way of helping an individual to re-examine issues in their lives as well.
Mm-hmm. When you say re-examine, I know that therapy without hypnosis, its goal is the same thing. And what we're doing is trying to help people get in touch with memories that may have contributed to the current behavior or the current emotional state. And our goal is actually the same, but we're doing it with different methods. How is hypnosis a way of maybe shortcutting and short-circuiting something?
Well, for some people, it can actually help circumvent months of in-depth therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You can go into the unconscious mind. And we were talking about the defenses a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do with a hypnosis is sometimes you can get the defenses to work with you to uncover issues, or you can help to loosen the defenses some. So the underlying issue becomes more obvious to the client.
Well, while this may scare some people, I think you said something very important there, and that it may loosen some of this up, but still, if you're not ready to go back and fully remember something, you'll only get bits and pieces of it to kind of ease into it. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. The thing is that, I want to emphasize that it is the client that has to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
And if the client doesn't cooperate, if the individual doesn't cooperate with hypnosis, they're not going to be hypnotized. And even under hypnosis, if they don't want to reveal something about themselves, they're actually not going to.
Or if, like I said, if they're not ready to get all of the information yet, to really look at every piece of the puzzle, it'll happen a piece at a time.
That's right.
And the person under hypnosis is still in control of that, not the hypnotherapist, correct?
That's right. Yeah, the individual is always in control. It's an illusion on the stage, and so it sets in people's minds that the hypnotist is in control, but really isn't. It's
mm-hmm.
A lot of people who have experienced hypnosis will tell you that they feel more in control of their lives after having had the experience.
Mm-hmm. Why so?
You realize when you're under hypnosis that you're the one in control,
mm-hmm.
and you feel a greater sense of control.
So it actually empowers individuals.
It's empowering, yes.
Okay.
You're empowering. Well, 88% of your thought processes take place in the unconscious mind, and 12% take place in the conscious. So when you're in hypnosis, you're actually accessing that 88%, and it's a very powerful feeling for people.
Okay. I always like to get into history of things.
Yes.
I know that hypnosis in some forms has been around as long as man's been around. You know, nature can hypnotize us, and early civilizations had their own ways of praying or meditating and things like that.
Yes.
And I believe that it was someone named Mesmer that actually developed this technique and did it consciously with people. And the phrase mesmerize comes from that. Is that correct, or am I?
Well, mesmerize does come from mesmer, yes. But it was actually used 3,000 years ago by the Chinese for pain control.
Ah.
And the Chinese have been using it, for a millennium. Mesmer took that information and then began to refine it a little more. But hypnosis was actually first used in the United States. As a medical tool back during the American Revolution.
Really?
Yeah. They used hypnosis as the main form of pain control when they had to do surgeries or amputations out on the battlefield.
And they didn't have the
They didn't
anything
have
else, the supplies to use anything else.
That's right. They didn't.
So the doctors back then were actually trained, or there were other people by their side doing this with them?
You know, I'm going to assume, you know, I really don't know, but I assume that it was the doctors themselves.
Okay.
That knew how to do the hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Although, also a lot of the people on the battlefield weren't doctors.
Right. That's true.
But people were, you know, that was part of the training was to, to learn hypnosis because it was used for controlling pain. The really interesting thing is that in 1995, the National Institutes of Health recognized hypnosis as a very effective way for controlling pain for cancer patients.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that I think they did this on ER, the TV show, but I've also read about it where they've used hypnosis instead of anesthesia for surgery.
Yes.
So if someone doesn't want to take the drugs or has some reaction and they know they can't, they can actually cut someone open and perform surgery while they're under hypnosis and they won't experience it as pain? Is that true?
Well, for a very small number of people, they can do that.
Okay.
Where they don't have to use any kind of anesthesia at all. For the vast majority of people, they're going to have to use some form of anesthesia, but using hypnosis, you can reduce the need for the anesthesia quite a bit.
Okay.
And they do that a lot in childbirth.
Reduce the amount of anesthesia that you'd need to take.
Right.
Okay. Which is kind of why they have them counting backwards when they start.
Oh, you mean with anesthesia? No, I think that's...
No, I'm just joking. I know they just want to see when they've gone into the anesthesia enough. So
right.
We're talking about how this is used for pain control. And let's talk a little bit more about habit control and how it helps also maybe with phobias, because I know it's used for phobias too.
It's very effective for phobias. When you're working with a phobia, what you're working with is a trigger. Individuals make an association between, let's say they have a fear of lizards. So somewhere in the individual's history, they created an association between lizards and terrible fear. So now whenever they see a lizard, they have this automatic response. The lizard becomes a trigger, and it triggers the anxiety response. And so what you can do with hypnosis, and it's really effective for this, is you can replace the trigger. You can change the response to the trigger so that instead of the unconscious immediately creating this this fight-flight response, it can create a neutral response.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So when, let's say, what you would do is you would get the client to begin to de-escalate their reaction through hypnosis to lizards. And in their mind, they begin to associate a feeling of neutrality or calmness when they see it.
Mm-hmm.
The unconscious.
But you're actually doing this through imagery while they're in there.
Yes.
I would assume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the unconscious mind really doesn't know the difference between the imagination and reality. The conscious mind does. That's its job.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that job is done because it's done by the conscious mind, the unconscious doesn't need to do that. So when you're trying to take away a phobia or a fear like that, the unconscious doesn't know the difference. So when you start associating like lizards with a sense of calmness, it just accepts that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lizard no longer becomes the trigger for an anxiety response.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. You know, I that I do breath work with some clients called rebirthing.
Yes.
And to me, it's another form of hypnosis. And I've actually had a client about 8 months ago who had a real fear of flying, and unfortunately he sometimes has to fly for business and some personal stuff. So somebody suggested that he come to me and that we do some breath work. And we achieved something very similar, because while you're about 20, 30 minutes into the breath work, you're in that altered state that you're talking about. The conscious mind is kind of stepped aside, and that's when affirmations and other thoughts can be reinforced in there. So So again, even in therapy, there are different forms of hypnosis. In some,
yeah.
With some therapists, it's just the fact that they have that very calm, steady voice that lulls people and makes them feel safer and more comfortable and allows them to open up.
Well, you know, Stuart, actually what it is the relationship the individual has with the person who's going to hypnotize them.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel comfortable, in fact, their voice doesn't have to be, I mean, it helps if the voice is lulling,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't always have to be.
Well, I'm just saying that the voice like that is just one way of
right.
doing hypnosis. I took some workshops, about 20 years ago. I took a weekend workshop where we actually were taught techniques and tools, and basically... I was able to do it. I never got certified to use it, but basically it was a progressive relaxation technique that seemed to do the same thing. So there are many
yeah.
ways of doing this, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the most effective way of doing it when you're talking about using your voice
mm-hmm.
is to match your voice to the breathing
mm-hmm.
of the other individual.
Right.
And as you match the pace and rhythm of your voice to their breathing or to their heartbeat, if you can ascertain that, and then you can start to lead it down. You can start to slow the heartbeat down by leading it with your voice or the breathing with your voice. And that's because, again, they want to cooperate with you.
Right.
And that becomes a way also of hypnotizing people. But
well,
it's their trust in you. It's their connection to you that's the very most important part of going into hypnosis.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking just a bit ago about medical uses for hypnosis like pain. How about in treating illness, and what effect does it have on the immune system?
I don't have any statistics that I can give you on it,
mm-hmm.
but I have heard, and I strongly believe that it can help, and I have heard that it helps the immune system,
mm-hmm.
that it can help build actually a positive outlook
mm-hmm.
On life can help build the immune system.
And the fact that it helps you relax more and de-stress
yes.
will also give the immune system more energy and more things to do its job.
Yes. And you reduce levels of cortisol in your body.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, cortisol is a hormone that's released when you're under stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stress hormone, and it causes people to hold on to weight. It causes people to feel an anxious. It's rather toxic in the system. And under hypnosis, and just like meditation, it reduces the levels of cortisol in the body, allowing you to actually lose weight.
A lot of people would like that.
Yeah, well, just getting a good night's sleep helps to reduce weight. Now, of course, you've got to eat right and exercise. And
right.
But just relaxing the self lowers the cortisol level.
Well, continuing with the medical issues, though, if it's true that what we hear is like 90% of most illnesses are psychosomatic, wouldn't hypnosis actually help with 90% of most illnesses if it's mind over matter?
Well, honestly, there are two ways of answering that. One is, yes, I believe hypnosis could help all.
Mm-hmm.
But do I believe hypnosis would cure? No, I don't.
Okay.
I think that it could be it would have to be a combination, because a lot of, we talked about defenses earlier, defenses run very deep in an individual, and hypnosis doesn't always get to the defenses, nor should you remove those defenses for an individual.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for very important reasons.
Right. Now, you know, I'm asking these questions because I'm trying to get out there all of the myths about this, and I don't want people to be misled, which is why I asked that. But if you have somebody who is dealing with having to take certain medications, can hypnosis help reduce side effects and their reaction and their ability to absorb those medications and help them work better?
Well, I do know that hypnosis actually can help an individual reduce nausea.
Mm-hmm.
There are some... chemotherapies for cancer, of course, that cause nausea, and hypnosis for some people can be very helpful in reducing the effects of nausea. As far as making the medication more effective, I don't think hypnosis independently would make the medication more effective, except if it were to reduce anxiety for the individual, that would cause a chemical change in the body that would allow the medication to be absorbed more easily, then yes.
Right.
But the suggestion of hypnosis alone, no, is not going to make it more effective.
Good. Let's talk about forensic hypnosis for a bit. We've all seen movies where somebody was hypnotized to remember a rape or remember some minute situation at the crime scene that maybe they wouldn't have remembered if they weren't under hypnosis. Does it really work like that?
Yes and no, but yes. Gosh, all these questions are like yes and no. Sleep. Yes. What you do with hypnosis, again, you go down into the unconscious mind, and you can help to bypass all the chatter and the distraction of the conscious mind. And then you can go into the memory of a scene that took place for an individual. And if it's their intention to relive that scene or to see it, yes, with hypnosis they can go into it and they can see quite a bit of detail in it.
So they might actually get to see the license plate number that maybe they didn't even think they observed.
Yes, there are many cases of that. The interesting thing is that what your eye observes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's the eye takes in much more information than the brain processes. And with hypnosis, for some people, you can go put them under hypnosis, and they can recall more details than they ever realized at that moment. It's kind of like speed reading. When you learn how to speed read, you kind of see the whole page, and your eye takes in all the information and it learns how to process that. So people are capable of taking in a large amount of information, but we haven't trained ourselves generally how to sort through it or how to make sense of it. But what you can do with hypnosis is you can take advantage of that for some people and be able to put them back under hypnosis and then to help them through hypnosis, sort through that information to pick up a license plate number that maybe they consciously didn't, you know, observe, but it did register in the unconscious.
Well, how acceptable is this within the legal system, and how much is it used within the legal system? Do you know?
Oh, you know, I'm not an expert on that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that it has been used in the legal system. But remember, with hypnosis, the individual does not fall asleep. You
Right.
are not out of control. So you can put somebody into hypnosis, and if their intention is to lie about something,
mm-hmm.
they can lie about it under hypnosis.
Interesting. Okay.
So as far as being able to hypnotize somebody and then use it in a court proceeding and say, well, this individual says blah, blah, blah under hypnosis, I don't really think that would be completely admissible, because the other side could prove that people can lie under hypnosis.
Okay. Well, that gets us to the false memory issue for me, because a lot of people who know about hypnosis are a little suspect about maybe some of the memories that people get to. And so what is it about, how does false memory occur, and how is it handled, and how do you differentiate between what's a real memory and a false memory when someone's going back there?
Okay, so like under hypnosis, you're saying?
Yeah,
you put them under and then you want to see, is this a real memory or a false memory?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is hard to discern.
Okay.
I don't think that an individual can just say, oh, I can see that's a false memory. What I do with people, if we do an age regression, to go back to an earlier point, one of the suggestions will be, this may be an actual memory, or this may be something that comes up from the unconscious mind, but whatever it is, it pertains to the moment now, and it has something for us right now.
Like a dream.
Right. So, okay.
Like a dream may be a memory of something that happened, or it may be some information that your subconscious mind is giving you to help you process through something.
Exactly. It's a conceptualization then. And it may not be a literal experience that took place, but it becomes an issue is conceptualized by the dream.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it becomes a metaphor. So the individual is saying, you know, under an age regression, let's say, they're having the experience of being outside and feeling a tremendous freedom, walking around, and they mention something very specific, you know, like out by a lake. Mm-hmm. And you do the history on the individual, and you find out they've actually never been by a lake.
Mm-hmm.
So what you, that information still is valid in that maybe that is expressing a part of themselves that feels a sense of liberation and a sense of freedom, and the lake has certain meaning for them in their lives. It's not useless information that they've created. It's like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can analyze it from the dream perspective.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And what about self-hypnosis? Because I know this is a tool that you're not, the person doesn't maintain a dependency on the hypnotherapist to keep doing this, that there's actually a way for a structured self-hypnosis as a way of dealing with issues or just relaxing. So talk about self-hypnosis for a minute.
Well, self-hypnosis really is different from, it's called heterohypnosis, which another person is doing the hypnosis with you. With self-hypnosis, you are doing all those actions yourself. You are you're self-motivated, you're self-directed. And you can put yourself into a hypnotic or suggestible state on your own by focusing on your breathing, by relaxing muscle groups, and then going into an imaginative place for yourself. And self-hypnosis, I think, is really wonderful and is a great tool for people in being able to feel more centered in their lives and more relaxed and more focused. But if an individual is trying to work with a specific issue, they already have set up for themselves their own blocks to recovery, their own resistances to whatever the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And so for an individual to try to fix an issue like that through self-hypnosis, they may not be completely successful because they know, you know, this is all going on in the inner workings of their mind, and they already know the barriers they've created. And many times we're blind to our blocks and our resistances.
Well, I think the important thing here is that self-hypnosis is not really a tool for people to use instead of going to a hypnotherapist. It's usually
correct.
Something that is taught to them by a certified and trained person to reinforce the stuff that they may be getting in those sessions. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. It can be used that way. Self-hypnosis can be used. There are a lot of uses for it. But it's different than when you go to another person, when you go to a therapist for the hypnosis. Because when you're sitting there under hypnosis and you're being guided by the other person, you don't have to, first of all, you don't have to direct yourself. You're following the direction of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if your mind is trying to go down a different pathway as a resistance, if another person is giving the hypnosis to you, you are less likely to go down the other path. You're more likely to follow what the hypnotist mm-hmm. is telling you.
Yeah.
If you're by yourself doing it, there's a good chance that you're not going to, you might get off course.
Okay. I always relate these things to the rebirthing and the breath work. It's different when they're going to a rebirther, and yet it's a tool that is usable once they really feel that they own it, that they could rebirth themselves and get similar benefits out of it. So,
yeah.
Certification. I mean, there are a lot of people, I know that most states now are licensing or certifying hypnotherapists. So what should people be looking for if they're looking for this?
Well, it varies state by state. You want to look, I strongly feel you should look for an individual who's a licensed individual, a licensed family therapist, a licensed psychologist, a licensed psychiatrist, who has had training at a reputable institute for hypnosis. There are a lot of people out there doing hypnosis that aren't licensed. Some of them are good. But there are many of them that took a 2-day course,
mm-hmm.
And then
like the one I took 20 years ago, right.
And they can hang a shingle out. Well, in California, you can still do that.
Serious?
Yeah. You can still take a two-day course. There is actually no certification process in California recognized by the state. The certifications are by the individual schools.
Can you call yourself a hypnotherapist or a hypnotist?
A hypnotherapist. You can call yourself a hypnotherapist. You can actually hang out a shingle, and you know what? You don't even need to go to a school to call yourself a hypnotherapist. It's unregulated.
Wow. I'm shocked. So even more important, then, is that people really ask about a person's background, their extent of experience, how long they've been doing this, and
right.
find out what the results have been.
Yeah, well, if you see a licensed mental health professional, there are certain standards, if you call yourself a hypnotherapist, that you have to abide by.
Mm-hmm.
But if the individual is not licensed in the mental health field, there is no regulating body for someone calling themselves a hypnotist.
Okay. So, we've talked a lot about hypnotherapy tonight, and I know that it's not everything that you do in terms of your professional life. I know that also that you have CDs that make use of hypnotherapy and suggestion for people dealing with a lot of issues. Talk about the CDs, and you have a great website called latherapist.com.
Yes.
People can get information on your CDs, on you, and a number of other things. So tell me about some of the CDs.
Well, actually, on the website, latherapist.com, there is a link there that can take people to the CDs. There's a CD on there called Tension Relief. And it's a talk and a hypnosis session that's done to help people gain a sense of calmness and peace wherever they are. By simply rubbing their fingers together, they get a wave of relaxation that washes over their body. So they can be going into a meeting and feeling a lot of anxiety or going up to give a talk in front of a bunch of people. They can rub their fingers together from this and just feel this wave of relaxation, feel more centered in being able to give their talk or to do their meeting. There's another CD I have out there called Anger Management, which is a talk on anger and how to cognitive approaches or talk therapy approaches for handling anger. And then there's a hypnosis on there for letting go of it and creating a pathway in the mind through the hypnosis for letting go of anger and holding on to the empowerment. Because when we get angry, we feel a rise of energy in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two things we can do with it. We can then turn it into something destructive, or we can turn it into something constructive. And so with the hypnosis, I help people turn it into something constructive so that they can move forward and have it and change their frame of thinking. So there's a hypnosis CD on that. I've got another one for sleeping at night called Stress and Sleep.
Actually, I've actually gave that one to a client of mine, and it really helped them.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of really good comments from the sleep CD. Actually, from all of them, but that one people have really, really liked.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to help them sleep at night. And there is another CD called Surviving the Wedding, which is actually helpful for the interactions between the prospective spouses on their in-laws and dealing with all the stress and tensions around the wedding. But on that CD, there's a hypnosis track for the bride for being able to walk down the aisle feeling relaxed and comfortable. And a lot of brides actually have this fear of either falling down or falling off their shoes as they're walking down the aisle,
uh-huh.
or these hidden social phobias come up, you know, fear of being stared at or making a mistake. And there's a hypnosis on there for brides to be able to walk down the aisle and just feel completely relaxed. And I have gotten quite a few responses from people who really felt it helped them a lot when they were walking down the aisle.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
okay.
It's great.
Now, you are also a radio talk show host, too.
Yes, I am. I was on your show
a few weeks ago.
Yes, you were. And you were fantastic.
Tell us about Shrink Wrap.
Yes, I have a show on KCSN 88.5 FM called Shrink Wrap.
That's in Los Angeles.
It's in L.A., and it airs Tuesday evenings at 6:30. And people can actually pick it up on their computers 6:30 Pacific time by going to our website, which is shrinkbuzz.com. and they go into shrinkbuzz.com, click it, click on the microphone, and it'll take you right to the show at 6:30. Phyllis Chase is my co-host on the show.
And she's also a therapist.
She's also a marriage and family therapist, mm-hmm. and the two of us host Shrink Wrap together.
Well, it's a half an hour show, correct?
Yes, it is.
And what's the focus of the show each week?
Oh, the show focuses on new therapy modalities, different modalities that people use, hot topics in mental health. We had William Glasser on the show a few weeks ago. We're going to have Albert Ellis on the show in a couple months.
Uh-huh.
Harville Hendricks, the Gottmans, and John Gottman's all over AOL right now. Every once in a while you'll see him, like, you know, his stuff. And we had him on the show 2 weeks ago, and it was great having him on.
And you had the world-renowned therapist, Stuart Altshuler, on there talking about what it means to tell the truth faster.
That's right. We had you there.
I'm in great company if I'm in company with Glasser and all the others.
You are we're in great company.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we have your website on our webpage.
Oh, thank you.
So that people can... if they ever go onto our website and they want to go into our resources, they can actually go on to tell the truth faster, too, from hitting your link.
Great. Well, that's a good bridge into reminding people that I do have a website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com, where you can read some articles I've written. You can, if you want to email me, so you're on my weekly announcement blast that goes out to about 800 people so they know what the topic is and the guest is each week. And if you have missed any shows, I've archived every show that I've done for the last 4 years, and it's free to go on there and download any of the shows and, you know, any topics that are relevant for you. And in a few weeks, the show will be up and running on the archives also. So if you have some friends that need to hear about hypnotherapy, this would be a good way to get them to hear it. So what is left for you to tell us about hypnotherapy? What are you suggesting?
Well, I think
no pun intended there.
It's a fantastic tool for people to use in therapy. I think it can be very effective. It just has to be understood because there's so much misunderstanding about it and so much mystery around it. It's a tool. It's a modality. Generally, it is not the entire answer to an issue. It's part of the answer, and I think it can be very effective if it's used appropriately. And it's nothing to be afraid of.
Right.
It's actually something very natural that we go in and out of every day. When we're driving our cars, like we talked about earlier, when we're watching movies, you know, when you're watching a movie and somebody jumps out at you at the movie and you jump and scream, well, you have been hypnotized because you're responding to that scene on the screen as if it were real, but it's really not. It's just a screen with light on it.
Uh-huh.
But your mind has created this image that's real,
mm-hmm.
and you're actually in a state of hypnosis. So it's really something that we naturally go in and out of every day. It's nothing to be afraid of. And absolutely remember that nobody can control you. They cannot control your mind. You are the one that gives permission. You're the one who accepts the suggestions, or you can reject the suggestions. You're in control the entire time.
I remember when I was living in Florida and I was hypnotized for the first time. It was like an in-service training, and I volunteered at this clinic I was working at. And I remember coming out of it and saying, well, I didn't feel hypnotized. And the hypnotherapist said, well, that's what everybody says, but you were. And the people who were observing me could tell very clearly that I was. So it almost feels like a normal state of being in a lot of ways, because you're not really asleep. You're awake and listening to what's going on and aware of what's going on around you.
That is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people will say that they don't remember it, or they don't remember parts of it. One thing that people experience with hypnosis is a time distortion. You go into hypnosis, and let's say that you know, you're under for 30 minutes, it'll feel like 5 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes for many people.
Right.
And
so, Jim, I want to thank you for joining us on this Friday night, and I really appreciate it. I respect you a lot as a therapist and as a friend. And I know that my listeners got a lot out of this tonight, and we might even get some emails from it.
Well, thank you so much, Stuart, for having me on your show.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'll get you back on again. Now, I want to thank all of you for listening. This is my new time and place on KXAM, 1310 AM in Phoenix. And that's every Friday night at 7 o'clock Phoenix time. And tune in next week, and everybody have a great weekend.
That I heard of.